Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast, where, like Simmons, we have more fun when puffies are involved. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 109 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing Season 6, Episode 7 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. titled Told Ya, which aired June 28th, 2019.
And this episode was written by Mark Leitner, and it was directed by Keith Potter, whose name I don't recognize from the list of directors over the seasons, but this episode was kind of a pivot point, and I think with the halfway point, sometimes the expectations are very high, but I'm hoping that the excitement is going to start on the downswing, because this one really kind of tread water for me. How about you?
Yeah, well, I thought you were going to say, hopefully as we discuss it, you'll end up liking it and appreciating it more, which is kind of what happened to me on my rewatch. But yeah, I'm with you. I always enjoy Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But not one of the stronger episodes, even of this season.
Right. And that's okay, because I have faith in the overall storyline, because I mean, I really have enjoyed the idea of the overall arc. And I just kind of want to see where it's headed at this point, especially since, especially Fitz and Simmons spending more time on Kitson was a little weird. But we did get a couple of guest spots out of it. And it was Carolina Wydra, something like that. Kind of rhymes with Hydra, if you think about it.
I like it.
But she was a guest star as Izel, a very mysterious character that we'll have to talk to. But Dave, you noticed that she played Violet in seasons 6 and 7 of True Blood. So some people might recognize her from that.
Yeah, and she's rocking the Sydney Bristow red wig.
Yeah. But unfortunately, Anthony Michael Hall, whose guest spot was really hyped up from even before the season began, I felt like his guest spot was a little wasted. He had some nice, funny moments, mostly acting as a foil for Fitz's sarcasm, but he played Mr. Kitson in this one, and I don't think we're going to see him again, and that's kind of a shame, because you feel like maybe that was a wasted cameo in a way, but we had fun while it lasted.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if the story takes us back to Kitson, something's wrong. I don't see any reason we should be going back to Kitson.
Right. In fact, I would very much not like it if we spent more time in space. You know, Faith's been telling us she's done with space. I had a little bit more endurance for the space plot line, but I'm really ready for it now, because they've got a ship. They have a mission on Earth. So let's get the team back together already, right?
Yep.
So let's go ahead and dive into it with our episode discussion.
All right, Mike, I think one of the strengths for me are the personal exchanges between the characters. And I guess you could argue that generally happens quite a bit. But in an episode, as you just alluded a few minutes ago, that story was average at best. The exchanges really spoke to me. I mean, Daisy and Mac, and they got in so much in a short period of time. I mean, the whole thing with Yo-Yo and his relationship with her, and Sarge, the burdens of leadership. So I really liked that. Daisy and Deke is always fun to watch. No question, yeah. Right?
Well, yeah, and I think you're right. It's interesting you honed in on the exact same thing I put in my review for Den of Geek, which is that the dialogues really pulled this one up in my estimation. It wasn't enough to compensate for some of the other shortcomings, but yeah, these dialogues, expertly written as always, and even when it was comic relief, like Deke trying to impress Daisy, it's just the way he did it was so subtly and yet not subtly done at the same time, which is kind of a tough thing to do from an acting perspective and a writing perspective.
Right, and the way she played off his attempt to impress her with his wealth. She's got her clipboard there. She's running down the checks on on the ship.
And she was very diplomatic, actually.
Yes. And then Yo-Yo and Jocko, his description of the family and the fact that they were all bakers, because each time she thought he was going to say something else, and it was very mundane that really humanized him, even though I guess technically he's not human.
Well, that's the other thing. Well, yeah, I don't know. Or does he just have abilities like she does? But yeah, you're right. Was that just a ploy for him to delay her long enough to get his fire breathing powers together? Or was that a genuine humanizing moment? And it's something that you kind of have to call into question. But yeah, she thought every time he was going to say something violent or something about being a fighter, and it was always quite the opposite. Just a fun little foiling of our expectations.
Yeah. Now, you know, you mentioned the puffies in the intro sequence.
Yeah.
And certainly one of my favorite scenes is when Fitz and Simmons and Enoch end up back in the Kitson bar. But Fitz says to Gemma, "Is there something you're not telling me?" And I guess I felt like there's a lot of that going around. I mean, certainly we see that scene with Deke learning about Fitz's death and really upset, angry that he wasn't told. And
justifiably so, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Although at the one point, Mac finally says, "Yeah, but you left."
Yeah, but is that any reason to, like, someone quits the job, so you're not going to tell them? Like, let's say you are still working at the school that you and I worked at this whole time, and one of our friends passes away or something. I'm not going to tell you just because you're not working there anymore.
Yeah, good point. Good point. But it also, I think this episode speaks a lot to the struggle that Mac is having as the leader. And on a first watch of the episode, I really felt that it was a plot deficiency. But the more I thought about it as I was rewatching it, I think it speaks to his character and the development that he's going to have to go through if he is going to fill Phil Coulson's shoes.
Yeah, and it really came to light in this one, especially with regard to his interrogation techniques, which I think were quite lacking.
Sarcasm doesn't sit well with him.
No.
Now, as usual, great special effects. I especially liked, you know, the metal shrike spikes in the pod. That was just outstanding. And then when they flew out into space when they opened the door, that was great. Mm-hmm. But I think what bothers me most about this is the excessive hubris exhibited by so much of the S.H.I.E.L.D. team, which not only is it an unattractive look, it's just flat out stupid.
Yeah. And I don't even know if hubris is the right word. It might just be moral posturing and just being self-righteous a bit with regard to Sarge's methods.
I mean, I guess I feel, as I'm sure you do, given everything they've seen, why would you discount from the start everything Sarge and Snowflake and Jocko are telling you? So
yeah, you've seen the video footage. They've done this before.
But yeah, we learned that the Shrike creator is coming and the word monster is tossed around, although I doubt whether it's a monster in, you know, like supernatural sense. So
yeah, it's not going to be like the mind flayer in Stranger Things or something like that.
Right. and then the last thing before we get into the episode details, that whole idea that we got to figure out what to call him. And I'm thinking like, well, how about Sarge? Because that's his name.
Well, it sounds like a title, but yeah, it seems a convenient enough title.
And how stupid is Mac to insist that Sarge is not real?
Well, not so much that he's not real, but that he's not a person.
Yeah. Based on what?
Based on the fact that he has Coulson's DNA and yet he cannot be Coulson. Therefore, there must be something about him if he's got someone else's DNA that's artificial, right? That's put together somehow.
Right, but he knows we don't now, but at one point we had two Fitzes. Were they both Fitz? Were they both real?
Yeah, but that was circumstances that they knew about in terms of time travel being involved. But I don't think they can make the conclusion that he's not real based on the fact that they have no evidence of how this person came to be in the first place. You could talk about clones, you could talk about LMDs, or you could talk about time travel the same way that Fitz created a duplicate of himself. So yeah, they are working with not enough evidence. Again, here is an indication of Mac's deficient interrogation skills, because what does he expect to get from that kind of talk? It's not going to sweeten the pot at all.
No, not at all. So, all right, well, let's take a look at the adventures on Kitson, and we get a name for the transporter rings Interplanetary Conveyance Disc.
ICD.
Yes, that's cool. I like it. And as we said earlier, the trio ends up in the bar in Kitson City. And you'd think three people materializing in the middle of a rockin' establishment might get somebody's attention. Nope. And I love that scene.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I think there was a scene like that in the cantina scene in Star Wars. I'm not sure. But the only thing that kind of made me raise an eyebrow is that there was all kinds of security to get in there in the first place. So should have at least alarmed someone in charge, but it was still humorous.
Well, right. And I love the reactions because Fitz, his first reaction is, oh, crap, we're back on Kitson. Gemma's like remembering their time there with Daisy. And yeah, it had its downside, but also some good times. And that's what she chooses to remember, the good times.
Yeah, especially since really all they can do is wait for a moment to sneak out the door. And I thought it was interesting. They were pretending to be spectators at a craps table, and Gemma was pretending to cheer on the whoever was in charge of the dice at the moment. And that's kind of admirable because at first I thought they were trying to get some money back again, like they did when Fitz and Enoch first got there. Or did you think that as well, that they were actually playing?
I did. And then I wished they had not let Gemma so close to the table. Boy, is her understanding of how to cheer somebody on as they're shooting craps or whatever they were doing. But obviously they're stranded because somebody takes the disc and disappears. So we've got that going on. But I love Gemma. This place isn't as much fun without the vapor trails. And of course, Fitz has really no idea. But that's the beauty of that line, that we know exactly what she means.
Yeah, it's kind of a callback moment. But yeah, the other thing that kind of brings up for me, though, is it reinforces what I feel are a couple of very stagnant plot lines, both on Earth and here in space. The fact that she's calling back to a more exciting episode and thinking of it wistfully almost transfers to the audience in a sense. It's like, yeah, this doesn't have the appeal it once did.
Right. And it also calls back to her relationship with Daisy and the experience they went through together. Mm-hmm. And like we said last week, yeah, it's great that Fitz and Simmons have been reunited, but there are some issues that still have to be worked out. And you know, once the dust settles, and I guess most weeks on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the dust is usually flying, so it might be a while before it settles, but they're going to have to work some of this stuff out.
Yeah, that's what you mentioned last week, and we can't forget that.
Right. Now, they're brought before Mr. Kitson, who is, of course, played by Anthony Michael Hall. And I love how they're immediately thrown into the guillotine game and how calm both of them are.
Yeah, that's kind of a hard thing for me. Is that something that we should be laughing and enjoying or critical of? Because it does seem like their reactions were a bit muted, except for the wonderful one where Fitz kind of did his girly scream the same way he did in the dream sequence last week. That's always fun.
Right. And I guess we could argue that the whole point of this game rests with physical upper body strength, which clearly Gemma doesn't have as much as the third guy in the trio here. But regardless, it was kind of funny. And then the redhead steps up and offers to buy the Terrans. And again, I like the little exchange she has with Mr. Kitson
but the main thing with Mr. Kitson, I think, was with Fitz, where he tried to say, you know, my grandfather came here with nothing but a handful of Yakulian slaves and a dream. And he's like, that's a wonderful, charming story.
Right. And he goes on to talk about building a whorehouse and a gambling establishment. But I love how they then cut to the scene with Mac and Daisy. I know your head is spinning. I'm thinking like, okay, nice touch.
Little pun.
Right. But we learn that the redhead's name is Izel, and she also gets Enoch in the deal. Apparently, he just was kind of a throw-in to this one. He didn't cost much extra.
Which is good because he leaves, and she doesn't demand that he stay because she paid good money for him. But I think that was the best part of this plot line is the departure of Enoch, because it was surprisingly poignant. And I really have to applaud Joel Stauffer for being such a great android character, because he's able to convey that charming sense of personability without really having much in the way of emotions. So kudos for that.
Yeah, and we get a nice exchange in the epilogue that we'll talk about in a few minutes. But in terms of the storyline, I guess a problem for me is this whole outer space story comes together a bit too neatly. She's purchased them. She's going to make them part of their crew. They don't want to be part of the crew. Well, we're going to Earth because that's where the artifacts are. Oh, okay. That sounds good.
That's why she needed Terrans, right?
Right. But she salvaged the jump drive. Okay. Whatever.
And it's the same ship that Enoch and Fitz came in on. So she's got the drive. She can outfit their ship. But yeah, that was convenient. And also, you have to wonder, what are the artifacts? Because I'm seeing all kinds of speculation out there that Izel is looking for the monoliths. And I'm like, okay, I like that theory. But that even adds to the coincidental convenience of this plotline, because she just happens to have hired the two Terrans who know exactly where those particular artifacts are. We'll have to reserve judgment until we find out what she's actually looking for, but that actually is a pretty good theory, even if it is a bit convenient.
Yeah. All right, so the evolution of Sarge's role at S.H.I.E.L.D. takes a huge turn, and you know, again, there are some great lines, great delivery from the actors, and the title of the episode certainly is one of those. But May brings in Sarge and Snowflake to HQ, and Snow is taken to holding with only one guard, and I'm thinking, like, really? And again, do I look at these incidents as Mac still learning on the job, or is it just poor writing? Because number one, why on earth would you assign only one guard? What, because she's a woman?
Yeah, and I think that is a sign of the production being lacking, not the actual character of Mac being lacking.
Okay, you'd think they'd put a hood over Sarge's head so that the other agents wouldn't freak out that Coulson's being brought in cuffs.
Yeah, I wondered about that, because I do remember them saying something about they weren't going to make that knowledge very widespread amongst the agents at large. They were kind of keeping that among the leadership, weren't they?
Well, that's what I thought, and when you really think about it, that's the wisest approach. Until you really get a better handle on who and what you're dealing with.
Yeah, so that was an interesting choice.
Right, and Daisy, of course, can't deal with it, walks out. Yo-Yo's got the attitude. And then, of course, Sarge, you need to let me go or everyone dies. And we talked to Clark Gregg, and we talked about what it's like to change characters midstream. But, oh, my gosh, Clark Gregg as Sarge just nails it in every scene.
Yeah, it's interesting because he does have some moments of confidence, but he also has some moments of being a little bit surprised at what S.H.I.E.L.D. is capable of, including foiling Jocko's plans to escape using his fire breath. So, yeah, he did a great job of kind of communicating a very subtle, nuanced character that's still distinct from Phil Coulson.
Right. And again, I love that line that he gives to Mac, that by the end of the day, I'll be the one in charge. And we know that's going to happen. We're just wondering at this point, how?
Exactly right. Because it's taking us a while to understand why Mac wants to do the moral thing. These people are being possessed by these shrikes, and you can't just necessarily kill them without trying to get them uninfected, but they did see what happened to Keller. It's not like they didn't try with him.
Right.
So it's one of these things where you have to understand that there might be some necessary evils here, and you have to at least get more information from Sarge before you start, you know, posturing with your superiority, which I think was the wrong move on Mac's part.
Okay. All right. Is it at all possible that Daisy does not realize Deke has a major crush on her?
I don't know. That's a good question. You would think she would know by now, but if we go back over the different actions, it's possible that she could still be blind to it.
Because I am still a little bit torn over whether I want Deke to stop following her around like a little puppy dog or her to just simply tell him, dude, back off. I'm not interested. I know we need some comic relief, and I know we get the scene where he is really angry, as we said a few minutes ago, about not being told that Fitz died. But I guess I'd like to see a little less comic relief with Deke and maybe a little bit more serious approach.
Well, I do think we saw a turning point for his character, because he couldn't just ignore his whole tech genius background. So he did sneak in the Michael Jordans. He did talk about, you know, we innovators like to this and that. You know, that was kind of nice phrasing. But at the same time, because they switched to this offended Deke when he found out that they went and got Fitz, he's like, well, what do you mean they got Fitz? Didn't we already have him? And I really liked that exchange, even though I think Mac didn't necessarily make a good argument in telling him why he wasn't told about Fitz's death. And I think even May said it was a mistake not to tell Deke when they first picked him up in that episode, Code Yellow.
Yeah. But I think one of Mac's strengths is that he is able to remain calm. I think he understands he was wrong in not telling Deke, and he's going to let Deke get it out. And then he says, well, I could really use your help with this. Oh, you're trying to buy me.
It worked.
It totally worked.
Yeah,
that was great.
Yeah, and then that did make him more useful. So like I said, I think that's a pivot point for the character. He was very useful in getting the tablet to work that tracked the Shrike possessed. And they immediately put it to use by rounding up those two characters. Now, it's interesting that they found two blips and decided to round them both up at the same time and stick them in the same containment chamber. I think there's been a little bit of speculation out there about whether or not that was a good idea, but it probably would have happened one way or the other anyway. Even if they had one, the defense mechanism of the Shrikes, where they turn into explosive crystalline structures, would have probably still come into play.
Oh, I like that. Explosive crystalline structures.
Well, the only problem I had with it is, wasn't that containment chamber supposed to be like indestructible? Because they even had Lash in there in season 3. So I'm not sure if I'm okay with the crystals breaking out of the containment chamber like that. But that's what we got.
Do we have more than one containment chamber?
I don't think we do. I think it's only equipped with one. But I guess they didn't have any choice in this matter. But still thought it was a weird choice to put them both together. They could have picked up one and then picked up the other later. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, speaking of weird choices, I'm not sure what's really gained by showing Sarge Coulson's hologram that doesn't speak. It just stands there.
Yeah. Talking about, this is the man that you're somehow imitating. You're not the real person. This is the real person. And you have to wonder, what does Mac hope to gain from this line of questioning? Because really, it just seems to be a chance for him to say, this is how we're going to do it. We're not doing it your way. He's not necessarily trying to get more information about the creator out of Coulson or out of Sarge. Not that Sarge would necessarily be forthcoming with that information, but you would think that Mac would at least try.
Yeah. And you know, don't get me wrong. I think Mac is doing a good job as director. And one of the things I thought about today, if not Mac, then who?
Yeah, exactly.
And we learned tonight that Daisy more or less recommended him, and everybody's hand went up to, you know, support that recommendation. So it does seem as if she was the catalyst for him becoming the director. But of course, everybody had to come on board with that. But I love that scene between the two of them, because he acknowledges how difficult the job can be. And of course, her relationship with Coulson let her know how that job can really affect you. And earlier, we didn't mention it. I love the fact that Sarge picks up immediately that Daisy has daddy issues with, Coulson.
He's very perceptive, isn't he?
Yeah.
But the best parallel between Mac and Daisy in that conversation was the ability to compartmentalize, because Mac was really just talking about the mission at hand. Whereas Daisy said, listen, you know, I know I'm compartmentalizing and staying away from this mission because I can't deal with seeing Coulson's face on this man. But Mac is also compartmentalizing with regard to Yo-Yo and keeping that piece aside. So there is a little bit of similarity between their situation, and both of them need to face the music.
Yeah, but did you feel that the time wasn't right for her to bring up the Yo-Yo Mac relationship?
It was a bit weird. But again, it also was a bit weird for Yo-Yo to still be being like, yes, sir, very kind of snarky like at the beginning of the episode. But
yeah, I mean, I'm also trying to get a handle on how much time has elapsed, because I don't want to just make that blanket statement that she should be over it by now.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's not been long.
Right. It might be a matter of days even. So that's difficult. But I hear you. It does make you think she needs to be more professional given her experience. But, you know, we learned that Jocko's breathing problems, and I thought this was a nice touch. And we'd heard it before when we first met them, and they were in their trailer, and he hasn't been on his home planet in, I forget however long, Sarge says. And there's
something long.
All right. But he basically ends up having dragon powers. I'm thinking, like, what? No Daenerys Game of Thrones jokes here? Come on.
Yeah. But this is what brings up the same thing that I was worried about when we had that epilogue last week where Max said, we saw the footage, so we know the Shrike are coming. And it made me think, are these world hoppers instead of dimension hoppers? I mean, maybe we've had it wrong this whole time, because you could say, well, no, Jocko and Snowflake and Sarge and Pax, they all look human. So aren't they from alternate Earths? But Aizel looks human. Mr. Kitson looks human. You know, it's like there's a lot of aliens out there that look human and they're not from Earth. So maybe we are dealing with the Shrike going from planet to planet through these portals rather than from alternate Earth to alternate Earth. On the flip side of that, when Deke gets very angry about not being told about Fitz, he does drop in a mention of, never mind the fact that the multiverse theory has been proven by the fact that I still exist. And that proves that the multiverse is a thing. So I'm kind of confused now in the end.
Or is it that the grandfather paradox is not a thing?
Yeah, very weird. So having these two things side by side really make me wonder, what's the deal with Sarge's hopping around? And I think we're going to get answers pretty soon about not only why Sarge has gaps in his memory, but how they're doing this hopping around from world to world and what it means in terms of alternate realities or something on the galactic scale.
Okay. And you know, let's go ahead and put aside, because we talked about the reason that Mac has for not trusting Sarge and thinking he's something other than, you know, a real entity of some sort. You know, all this stuff is going on. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you make more of an effort to try to work with this person who clearly has way more knowledge about this entity than you do?
That's exactly what I was saying. Yeah. I definitely think they should at least try and get some strategic information out of him.
Right. And then finally, Mac is forced to ask for his help. So I guess this is where I give you my list of demands.
Yeah.
Right. And then, of course, everything starts happening fast and furiously. You know, they freeze the Shrike, you know, and that was the special effects scene that I was talking about earlier. If Yo-Yo wasn't just outside the pod, though, would Mac have agreed to Sarge's demand? I really thought about that because I didn't notice it on my first viewing.
Yeah, May, I think it was, that said something about Yo-Yo being there, and he immediately reacted.
Yeah.
So that's a good question. I'm not sure what I think about the cold. That kind of seemed a bit of an easy strategy for me, but maybe Mac will now try and, you know, freeze the Shrike out of their victims. I'm not sure if the cold will come into play again. But it did make for some great special effects, like you said.
Well, and the one that is easy to miss is when that one spike almost gets that agent that's with Yo-Yo and she reaches up her artificial hand.
Yeah, that was great.
And breaks it off. But Daisy then asks, what do we do next? All eyes go to Sarge. Told you.
Wonderful use of the episode title.
Oh, my gosh. That was. I don't know that there's been a better use of an episode title in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'd have to go back and look, but
yeah, that's the third one in a row that we've discussed as an actual title. So that tells you they're nailing it. in that respect.
Yep. So we get to the epilogue, and you had talked about Enoch and the actor and what a great job he does playing the AI. And, you know, they're back on that ship that had been taken from them earlier. And we get that essentially goodbye scene. And again, we've talked about the humanization of Enoch, and in his vocal delivery, he still got that AI about him. But he nails it that I know you humans don't like to say goodbye. And he doesn't exactly articulate it in the best way, but we know exactly what he means, as does Fitz.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if this Chronicom pager is going to come into play. Seems a bit of a Chekhov's gun, don't you think?
Well, I think so. And again, I don't know what else Enoch can add to the mix, but he's been a great character, so I don't want to totally discount him showing up again.
But if he does not show up again, that was a great way to have him go out. Because I was even saying a few episodes back that once he finds out that their mission to the future has been taken care of, his job as an anthropologist should demand that he recedes into the shadows. So I'm kind of glad he did that.
Yep. But, you know, as you said, good episode, not great. The story does get pushed forward. There's no doubt about that.
And you know that we're getting geared up for something, and we can now hope that Fitz and Simmons will be back with the team sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
All right. So we did get a little bit of SAS again this week. So we're happy to report that Faith has another SHIELD SAS report for us. I apologize. I mischaracterized it last week, and that's because we recorded it before we actually received the SHIELD SAS report. So it wasn't exactly the way I had described it, but I just think it's a great name for the new version of what we've got here. So let's take a listen to what Faith had for the winner for last week, and then the new choices for this week.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's SHIELD SAS report. This episode wasn't chock full of action or character development like last week, but we still got a little sass from the team. Before we get to those, let me share the winner from last week. By a landslide. So English.
I had no idea you were holding on to all that.
What's the point? Don't let anyone know, that's the whole idea.
You are so English.
And now for this week's contenders. Number one, thanks for the update.
An unfortunate circumstance, as we are still wanted on this planet.
Well, thanks for that update, Enoch.
Number two, feelings.
Her too, huh? Daddy issues?
See, what did I tell you? This guy's such a tool, there's no way he's the real Coulson.
Yeah, thanks, Deke.
Everyone seems to have a lot of feelings around here.
Number three, very convincing.
Come on, take the prize! Yes! Woo!
Cool. Really convincing, Gemma.
And number four, fishing trip.
Well, you might want to get used to the cell, because you're going to be in here for a while, my friend.
I don't think I'll be calling this home. Or calling you friend.
Well, that's disappointing. I was hoping maybe we could plan a fishing trip together.
Did I miss any you loved? I hope not. Make sure to tweet your favorites to me at FBMC, that's FBEEMCEE, with the hashtag ShieldSass. Or let me know on Facebook, which is also where you can vote for your favorite. That's facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM. While you do that, I'm going to go bake a loaf of bread. Just not with my breath. Have a great week, everybody.
All right. Thank you so much, Faith. And like she said, go to facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM to vote for your favorite. And we'll see if it's another landslide like it was last week. But we got some feedback from a couple of our regulars, so let's dive into it. Starting with Daryl. Daryl says, another great episode. It did drag a little with Deke's awkwardness with Daisy, but other than that, I enjoyed every scene. They really had no excuse to keep Deke in the dark about Fitz dying, and Mac using his leaving the team as an excuse is just inexcusable. Deke needed to be told, but they couldn't be bothered to be that decent, I guess. I don't know what normal SHIELD protocol is, but you can't retrieve a prisoner the size of Jocko by yourself. He should have brought backup with him just in case. but I was really worried because I didn't want Sequoia to lose her new boyfriend. Seeing Anthony Michael Hall being attached to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. universe is just so exciting for me as a fan of his work. Also, I couldn't believe that they would actually put the two Shrike in the same pod. I could tell it was a bad idea from the start. Does anyone else think maybe the lady bringing Fitz and Simmons home is the Shrike creator? Ooh, that's an interesting twist. I sense betrayal coming.
I don't think that's going to be it. I don't think she's the Shrike creator. And you know, he mentions about that it's inexcusable not having told Deke. And I guess I'm just going to chalk that up to inexperience on Mac's part. I don't think he certainly meant anything malicious by it. I think he thought he was doing the wrong thing, but he's learning on the job, as we've said. So, and then the whole thing about putting them in the same pod, well, if they only have one pod.
Yeah, they might not have had a choice. But I did hear that criticism out there on Reddit and different places like that, pretty much universally.
Yeah. All right, we heard from Taltos, who says, so they have Sarge in custody. No, he has DNA identical to Coulson's, but they don't bother running a single medical test or scan on him. Just because the DNA matches doesn't mean there couldn't be other differences. At the very least, they might have been able to verify his story about being over 100 years old.
Oh, there you go.
Izell doesn't seem like someone that would require Fitzsimmons' help for retrieving technology from Sarge's team, so I wonder if her artifacts are the monoliths.
Oh, yeah. So she had that theory, too, yeah.
We know the Mavith one has been on Earth for a long time, but I don't think we know much about the others. Is it possible that the team using the time monolith to return from the future allowed her to trace its location to Earth?
Well, it's definitely possible that that would be the way she found out it was on Earth. But yeah, I do remember that the Mavith one was happening when they had that other version of S.H.I.E.L.D. and there was like a aircraft carrier carrying it around before they actually reclaimed it. So yeah, it's definitely been in S.H.I.E.L.D. possession for quite some time. And I think that's where Dr. Benson is too, the Yucatan area that it was first found in. So we still have to wait and see what the payoff is for that. But yeah, a lot of great mysteries there that Taltos brings up as always. And if it does end up being the monoliths, we'll see how Izell is tied into it, because it does seem like a convenient conclusion, but also a very much interesting and intriguing one.
Right. And just as she mentions, there are many non-invasive things they could do to verify his story, to at least learn that he's not a machine. He's not, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It's weird that he's got that 100-year-old thing going on too. So might have been a wise thing, but we also heard from Skimmins this week, and Skimmins says, as beautiful as the Kitson Planet view was, I am so ready for everyone to be back on Earth together. Amen to that, Skimmins. Fitz is so ungrateful towards Enoch. He's gotten them closer to home and Fitz's goals than Fitz ever has this season. So I would really like to see him either tell Fitz off finally, or for Fitz to say he was wrong, because it's bits like this that make me not like his character, I have to say. Gemma is about as enthusiastic to these planet moments as me. Yeah. You can just tell Clark is having so much fun playing the flip side of the leader now. Yes, Sarge is still a leader, but he's a bit more free in his actions compared to Coulson, who did have regulations to worry about at times. Aw, Daisy looks so sad when she says they found Fitz. She misses her girlfriend. No, Deke, Fitz didn't die. I wish they'd stop wasting time on this plot, given they spat on it in the season finale scene. It would be one thing if he actually died, but this is just a waste of time to me. Yeah, I think we probably know how Skimmins feels about this particular aspect by now. Surely there was another way to get Deke to the tech lab so he could work on the stuff. Speaking of Deke, it's so sweet to watch him hit on Daisy, but I'm all for her gently turning him down. Yeah, that's what you said, Dave. Fitz is such a user when it comes to Enoch. If he does anything Fitz can't understand in the exact moment, he's the enemy. But the second someone sees his value, Fitz can't suck up to him fast enough. Things like this are why I say season 4 Dark Fitz is more like Fitz than he cares to admit. Mac, I thought you understood love at least a bit. Of course Daisy wants to get back in space. I'm going to be that person and ask, is that how Jocko baked the goods on his planet?
I love it.
Also, if he's a dragon, what are Snowflake and Sarge secretly?
Oh.
They might have some powers up their sleeve too. Yeah. Why would you put the two demon birds together in the first place, team? I feel that was just a for plot move. Oh, please, Fitz. Now you care about Enoch and what happens to him? Eye roll. I'm not buying his goodbye at all. Clearly, Enoch will be back because of the device. Well, that's it. We have to wait and see if that pager ends up being put into play. On the whole, a low good episode. Fitz hardcore annoyed me, but the Sarge stuff, as usual, was really good, so it balances out. Wow, tell us how you really feel, Skimmins. I don't think Fitz deserved quite that much ire, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, but you know, as you're reading each of her points, I have to say I agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much to all of you who gave us some feedback this week. There was a lot of great stuff in there that really added to our discussion. But that's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox. Keep up with show news and fan interaction by following us on Twitter at @Shield_GSM. And our popular Facebook group is at facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM, which is also where you can vote on the Shield SAS report.
And Mike and I'll be back next week with our discussion of episode 8 of season 6, titled Collision Course Part 1. And remember, after the episode airs, you can head on over to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to share your thoughts. Write us a message, record a comment using your computer's microphone, or you can call 304-837-2278.
And if you get a chance, please rate and review The Sandbox wherever you get your podcasts to let us know how you're enjoying our coverage of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You know, Mike, I think we did an excellent job keeping our heads during this discussion.
Oh, God.